I know as an educator, though, I'm concerned about cognitive issues in my classroom, and I see that every day.
And Eric Olson, we just have 30 seconds, but what you're demanding of the city?
We're asking for immediate action to make sure that every citizen in Newark has safe drinking water, bottled water for people at risk, and filters if those work out. Secondly, they have to treat the water so it doesn't corrode the lead pipes and cause contamination. And finally, they need to pull out all those lead pipes, and we'd like to see some federal court oversight of that whole process so it doesn't fall off the radar once the press attention has reduce. We're very concerned about that.
We're going to do part two of the discussion, put it online at democracynow.org. And we also have to hope to have Mayor Ross Baraka on the show next week, the mayor of Newark. Eric Olson, I want to thank you for being with us, top official at Natural Resources Defense Council. Please stay with us. And Yvette Jordan, Newark High School teacher, resident of Newark South Ward. That does it for the show. I'm Amy Goodman with Nermeen Sheikh.
It's 8 o'clock. Good morning. This is KBOO Portland. Up next, Paul Roland is the guest host for Voices from the Edge, and he has three guests in the studio. He'll also take your phone calls. The topic is the climate strike.
KBOO Community Radio is hiring a full-time volunteer coordinator. We're excited to find someone to manage KBOO's volunteer program and be responsible for the day-to-day coordination of volunteers as well as their training. For a full job description and instructions for applying, go to kboo.fm/volunteer-hire-2019. KBOO is an equal opportunity and affirmative action employer. Women and people of color are encouraged to apply. Again, for more information, go to kboo.fm/volunteer-hire-2019.
KBOO at the Clinton is a monthly film series that benefits your community radio station. This month, we'll host the 10th anniversary of Right to Survive on Thursday, September 12th at 7 p.m. at the Clinton Street Theater. The Right to Survive 10th Anniversary Celebration will celebrate the Shelter for All movement, participation of Right to Dream 2, and Right to Survive. There will be a retrospective with short films, slideshows, and speakers on 10 years of Right to Survive's work for safety, dignity, health, and well-being for those without shelter. Again, that's the 10th anniversary of Right to Survive on Thursday, September 12th at 7 p.m. at the Clinton Street Theater, 2522 Southeast Clinton Street in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
KBOO programming is made possible by KBOO member listeners and support from Portland Saturday Market, 46 years of American-made arts and crafts, freshly prepared international foods, local artisans, and local music in downtown Portland. Open every Saturday and Sunday in Waterfront Park, now through Christmas Eve. Event schedule, vendor information, and more at portlandsaturdaymarket.com. Time now for Voices from the Edge with guest host Paul Roland.
Get up, stand up, stand up for your right. Get up, stand up, stand up for your right. Get up, stand up,
stand up. And good morning. For the second straight day at the microphone at the 8 a.m. talk radio slot, I am your host, Paul Roland, filling in the last minute for Linda Olson Osterlin, who had other commitments and turned this over to me, and I'm glad to do it. We're going to be talking about the youth climate strike, the global climate strike, coming up this September 20th, and I've got two young activists with me in the studio, along with someone from 350 PDX who may or may not join the conversation. So let me just say hi to Yenna and Lana Paris. Good morning. Which one of you is Yenna? Go ahead.
Hi, I'm Yenna.
And I'm Lana.
Good morning. And you're both juniors at Cleveland High School. That's September 20th is a week from tomorrow.
Correct.
Correct. So first of all, tell us what's going to go on a week from tomorrow.
Well, a week from tomorrow at 10:30 a.m., people, thousands of people, are going to gather at City Hall, and then...
Can you guarantee that, thousands of people?
Yes, we have thousands interested and going on the Facebook event, and we have a ton of youth outreach happening right now.
Right on. Set City Hall, go ahead.
So at City Hall, we'll have a few speakers, and we'll have a rally there, and then we're going to march from City Hall over to MOMSI for a climate justice festival.
And what's that going to consist of?
So the Climate Justice Festival on the East Bank Esplanade is kind of a way for youth to get involved with their community, because I know as high school students, it's just so hard to get involved because high school is hard. High school, being a teenager is hard. So we're going to be tabling and offering some festivities just to get them ways to really get involved in the climate movement, involved with organizations and movements around Portland and even nationally.
But it's not just for youth. We want everyone in the community to come, everyone to be involved and just become educated about the movement.
I was about to ask, are they going to be able to get off school? But it is a strike. So have you, what's the buzz? What's the feeling you're getting from schools around the Portland area? What kind of, any sense?
Yeah, I mean, we have been in discussion with PPS concerning students' absences and just general support of the movement. And PPS recently did pass
a climate... Portland Public Schools.
Yeah, Portland Public Schools recently did pass a climate justice education bill. But so far we have, I think, neutral terms from them. And we can expect that students will be striking. They will not receive a day off. But the strike is at 10 a.m. at City Hall.
So had you put a request in to public schools to actually allow
it? We went to PPS with a list of demands. We wanted to be able to talk about it at assemblies and put posters up. Last year, there was another climate strike, and we were met with a lot of pushback from the district.
I remember that, yeah.
And so this year, we tried to get ahead of that and just go to them with like a list of demands. We wanted to work with them and come up with a solution that would be good for both sides. There's been a lot of, they've been dragging their feet a lot with it, and we were originally supposed to have an answer from them about the list of demands. I think it was like September 5th. Clearly that has passed, and we still have no definitive answer. So, but whether or not that works out, it's going to happen. The youth will show up, and we'll make our voices heard.
And how about like individual teachers? Gotten support from individual teachers?
Absolutely. I mean, my teachers, my individual life, they're just so supportive. And just shout out to like the Cleveland teachers in my life. They have been so supportive and so like educational just concerning this movement and considering about what the kind of activist I want to be as I move towards the rest of my life.
Now, Cleveland, I'm always getting the schools. Is that the one like right on Powell?
Yeah, Powell and 26.
Okay. Yes, yes, yes. I know that school. I used to work near there. All right. Well, as a sometime long time activist, one time activist, I'm very interested. I was briefly involved with Rising Tide here in Portland, and did some actions. I guess it was y'all are probably too young to remember the megalod issue when they sent these big tar sands machinery through Portland on their way up to the tar sands of British Columbia, and it's kind of like the last kind of major kind of direct action campaign, I think. And well, there's been some, but you know, around the fossil fuel infrastructure, you know, the export facilities and such, but not too many of them really got direct action. Anyway, that was that was kind of the last time a lot of people got together in Portland and did direct action. I'm not sure how relevant that is to this conversation, but I'm wondering like what in terms of beyond this particular climate strike and in terms of like activism in general, what sort of things have you already done? Like are you involved in school activism in like clubs or groups?
Actually, yeah. Lana and I are part of a racial equity class at Cleveland. It's called CARE. It's Cleveland Alliance of Racial Equity. It's a leadership class. We deal with racial equity issues within our school and within PPS, and we do a lot of research about that.
Yeah, and we're really focusing on student safety lately, right? Because we want students of color to just feel as safe and as generally accepted as they can in this predominantly white city that can often isolate students of color.
Uh-huh. And do you, I don't know if that's a difficult question to ask on the air, maybe some other students listening. I mean, what do you feel like the climate is at Cleveland around that?
Cleveland did have some incidents recently last year concerning a blackface cake.
Oh, no.
Yes, especially concerning the culinary class. But I think that was just an example of overt racism. Most racism is just an inherent, like, institutionalized thing, right? We experience it in everyday lives and interactions with microaggressions and interactions with an environment we don't really know how to interact with, right? As students of color, there is a certain layer of just having your skin color be something people might judge you for, might see you for, before they see who you are as a person, as a student, and willing to learn.
And, you know, Cleveland is, like, Southeast Portland. It's majority a white school. Even Lon and I, we're half Asian, and a lot of the time we can be the only thing close to it as a person of color in any of our classes, and it can be hard for people of color to feel like they have to be the voice for, like, the entire issue. Like, whenever we talk about racism or just, in history class especially, you know, it can be, like, teachers will expect you to talk on the issue, and they'll expect you to, like, speak for it and speak for everyone involved, and it's difficult.
Yeah, students of color should not have to relive their traumas just to educate others on what their history is.
Well, you know, let me jump into, we got a caller, so let me hold off on that thought, because that'll be a long thought. Let's just go to our first caller. It's David. Let me just give the number, 503-231-8187, and reintroduce my two guests, who are two sisters, who are both juniors at Cleveland High School, Yenna and Lana Paris. And go ahead, David, you're on the air.
Oh, thanks, and I'm glad I'm calling you from San Francisco, and we have this same march down here, although it's not as vibrant as it should be. There are still there were people down there last week as well, and thanks for your students for helping work on it. I was just going to raise, my parents were very environmentally motivated, and when we've been trying to deal with these environmental issues, economics seems to be the real barrier, where you can make money poisoning the planet, but there's no money to clean it up. And the biggest problem that I've found is that the legal angle of it, where there are waivers to pollute. It's as if the government gives somebody the right to poison the river or the right to poison the sky, and they don't force them to do. In the old days, there used to be a performance bond. If you hired a contractor to do some work for the road, for the city or for the county, they would.
Well, we lost David in the middle of his thought. Don't know what happened there, but you got a sense of where he was going. Any thoughts?
I think what is the most important thing to remember about climate activism is that climate justice is not just encountering the climate, right? Like, what matters to the earth specifically. It's also talking about immigrant rights, about environmental racism, about the inherent misogyny in some of these claims about Greta Thunberg. It's about encompassing every movement and ism that there has been, just because this is the earth that we live on, and any of those things, any of this humanity would not survive without it, and these issues are all interconnected and related.
Actually, David, if you're still listening, what you were talking about reminded me of the court case Juliana v. U.S., which is basically the youth versus the government. It's talking about how, constitutionally, we have due process rights, and we have the rights to life, liberty, and property. And so what that case is basically talking about is the youth are suing the government for saying, you have not protected our right to life and to liberty, and we might not have a future because of the actions that you've been taking. And so, yeah, that's a really great case. That's really some really amazing people and youth plaintiffs who've been working on it. And so that's just one of the things that gives me hope that we can change.
Well, actually, this what you just brought up, Lana, actually is kind of where I wanted to go. I want to push back a little bit on what you were saying. I mean, I was involved in a group, Earth First, that was justly criticized for, you know, its sort of lack of attention, let us say, to simplify things to the kinds of issues the range of issues of that are brought about by a white supremacist patriarchal society. On the other hand, you say in your material that, you know, this widely talked about, you know, 10 years or 11 years that we supposedly have to turn this thing around, whether we actually have that much time is an open question. But if we only have a certain window of time, and we kind of know what has to be done, it seems like then how do we actually move forward if we've been talking, you know, we've been putting these deadlines for decades. I mean, people said, you know, we only have a few decades, you know, or we only have 20 years, or, you know, it kind of changes. But the reality is, I'm sure you're somewhat aware of this, is that we're triggering these tipping points now. We're moving from what was seen as a kind of a far off linear process to a non-linear process where all sorts of things from the Arctic sea ice loss to the loss of forests to the melting of the tundra to melting of other forms of permafrost, the glaciers, are all acting together to trigger a non-linear process. It seems to be accelerating as we speak. I mean, this year we've seen incredibly dramatic things. So how do we confront that and confront all the combined issues at once?
So just to clarify, my name is pronounced Alana.
Sorry.
Yeah, no, absolutely. But we confront this because it's not as if we can choose one issue without choosing the other. These issues are related. Environmental justice is just as much tied to environmental racism as it is any other issue, because we see that the frontline communities being affected by climate change are first and foremost the third world countries and communities of color that do have to deal with this. As AOC said, kids in the Bronx have some of the highest levels of asthma as in this country had seen today. Just concerning youth and activism, you cannot choose one issue without choosing to have pushback on all these issues, right?
That's the thing about intersectionality, is that they're all connected. Mm-hmm. You can't say, how do we fight this one while also caring about these other ones, because they're all connected. If you're fighting climate change, then you're also fighting for these communities and you're also fighting against these issues. It's like, yeah.
But as David said, though, I mean, it is I don't know if it's fundamentally an economic problem. I mean, that gets into, I think, difficult questions that people don't want to, hold on a second, that people don't necessarily want to address. What is the fundamental source of the problem that we're confronting? And so how do you look at the actual cause or source together, and how do you fight it together? Did you want to say something, Misha?
Yeah. Hi, my name is Misha, and I work closely with Lana and Yenna and numerous other youth activists with 350 PDX for this climate strike. I'm going to chime in with some thoughts that a lot of us have talked about in a lot of our organizing spaces. And if it has to be boiled down to one thing, you can talk about the overarching problem of late-stage hyper-capitalism. Everything has been boiled down to profit over people. Mm-hmm. That means digging on indigenous lands for oil. That means using these fossil fuels that is causing our sea levels to rise. And it is constantly, how can we make more money? How can we
get our sources from like outside of the United States, and we're not talking about like the international problems that, you know, Western hypercapitalism has caused, whether it be taking monocropping or taking mass exports from overseas. You could talk about land sovereignty on top of that, whether it be in the Philippines trying to, you know, level out land for a dam while displacing numerous villages, whether it be talking about here in the United States with oil pipelines. You could talk about, the Pacific Islands and the like rising sea levels and the fact that our islands are disappearing. And what can it be boiled down to? It boils down to people in power wanting money. It boils down to money being held over the futures of our youth. It boils down to power, and but if we're going to subvert that power, power is in the people, and that is why our youth have been gathering, and there can be a change, because the more and more people that come, which is part of why we're doing this climate strike, is getting people to come, is getting people to understand that this is a critical issue, is understanding that more and more people, the more people that come along with us and learn and get educated and fight against the system and try to dismantle it, you know, that can happen. But what matters is that we all come together and we realize that this is more than just fighting for, you know, fighting against fossil fuels. It's also fighting for the rights of people and their lands. It's fighting for the rights to for youth to have future. And yeah, if you're going to boil it down to one thing, if you have to, that's that. But in the end, it's not truly climate justice if you're boiling it down to one problem.
So again, I'm speaking, that was just Misha with the with 350 PDX, and I'm speaking with Yenna and Lana Paris with her youth activists at Cleveland Junior High School, part of this global youth climate strike. Let me just, there's this paragraph here that give a little historical background. Earlier this year, Greta Thunberg and 46 other youth activists issued a call to everyone around the globe to join them in a massive climate strike on September 20th. The climate strike will kick off a week of mass escalated actions between September 20 and 28. School strikers are calling on everyone, young people, parents, workers, and all concerned people to join a massive climate strike on September 20th. And so that's what they're talking about. And again, so that's going to be starting at City Hall on next Friday, September 20th, at what time?
10:30.
At 10:30. So if anybody can make it down there for that, and then marching over the, I imagine, the Hawthorne Bridge,
mm-hmm.
over to OMSI, and it'll go all afternoon?
Mm-hmm. On the East Bank Esplanade.
On the East Bank Esplanade. Yes.
Yeah, and there's going to be the climate festival there, and there will be numerous climate activism groups, whether it be international solidarity, local problems, national problems. They'll be tabling there, and that is another tool for the community to use and find different ways to get involved to build that people power through the numerous movements and amazing climate activism that is happening here in Portland and across the world. So it's going to be not only a celebration of people coming together, but also building that movement and continuing to get people involved and saving the future of our planets, of our youth, and to give people a chance.
And is there going to be more stuff going on? It says here, kicks off a week of activities. Will there be further stuff going on in Portland?
Mm-hmm. It will be followed by a week of action with activist trainings, with community panels, all those sorts of things, all throughout Portland with communities represented.
Yeah, so every single day there's going to be different events put on by different climate organizations from around Portland, and they're all, yeah, there's going to be volunteer orientations, there's going to be panels and forums and all that stuff.
And you can find out more about that at climatestrikeoregon.org. There is a calendar with the numerous weekly events that will be happening, starting from that Saturday all the way up until the 28th. And again, it's climatestrikeoregon.org. There you can find all the events that will be happening actually statewide throughout the week. And I note that on the 20th in Oregon alone, there's like 20 events happening already, and that's not counting the 700 that are happening nationally and the thousands that are happening worldwide on the 20th.
So it's a good time to plug in if you haven't already, and plug in here at KBOO to call in. This is a live call-in show. It's 503-231-8187. My name's Paul Roland. I'm stepping in for the show for this morning. And it looks like we got another caller. Joe is calling in. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Hey, thanks for this great show. I wanted to ask a question of like the question of the strike as a tactic itself, whether rhetorically or practically. Like, you know, when you look to historical strikes and what made them powerful, it was like a very thick support system and a set of plans, really, for how to withdraw the labor of a given community, a workforce in a company or something, and that strikes that didn't work were ones that did not really have that thick support network and an ability to really endure the withdrawal of labor and the consequences for your livelihood and everything. And I'm just wondering how we connect that sense of really leveraging our power and being able to not just disrupt the system but stop it, and how that is coming into these conversations around how are we going to have a climate strike to affect these big changes. And I'll take my answer off the air.
Big question.
Yeah, so what we found, especially with youth organizing, we really do draw a lot of inspiration from these movements, right? These past movements. But as youth, I think because of this is such an age of social media, if you reach out and you send out like just one Instagram post, you can get a movement going. That's social media to me is the double-edged sword of activism, because you can sometimes cheapen a meaning, but you can also reach so many amazing people. And last year with our climate strike, we barely had the same kind of support we have now, right? We barely talked about reaching out to union organizations. We didn't talk about reaching out to PPS. We just started. We had to start somewhere, right? So last year, thousands of youth showed up. We were not prepared for just the amount of sheer numbers, right? But this year, with the support systems we've gained through 350 PDX and these organizations and just Portland's community willing to help us, I think we really have found like a great place to be in.
So what other organizations are you working with?
So one would be XR, so the Stop Zenith Coalition, the Sunrise Movement.
And Zenith is?
Zenith is
one of the biggest fossil fuel infrastructure producers here in Portland. They're in Northwest Portland. They are responsible for oil trains, tar sands, and they actually are one of the biggest exporters of those overseas. One of the big exporters that we go to are China. And so I know that one of the numbers that I heard on this tour, there's like an EJ tour, environmental justice tour here in Portland. And there is Zenith Energy can fill a whole train of oil, which is 44 carts, which is over 100 carts, and that's like over a mile long, and they just fill that with oil to bring up to Canada to bring cross nation. And so that is what Zenith Energy is. And yeah, we do have Extinction Rebellion, and they're leading a lot of actions against Zenith. And again, you can find that on climatestrikeorgan.org. And we are working with international solidarity folks, such as Pacific Climate Warriors, such as the Portland Committee for Human Rights in the Philippines, AKA PCHIRP. We have Anak Bayan, Gabriela PDX. You can see that more and the more of our list of partners who have been part of this coalition to make this movement happen on that website again, climatestrikeorgan.org.
And speaking of trains, we just dodged a bullet the other day, huh, with that LPG train that hit the Going Street Bridge. Apparently, if that had exploded, could have been serious disaster. As we saw in Quebec in Canada, destroyed a whole town. Anyway, nasty stuff. So we'll talk a little bit more about that. Joe brings up an interesting point. I mean, it's an interesting thing to think about a school strike. I mean, one doesn't think, obviously, you know, what Joe was referring to was like a prolonged strike where he actually you know, stop working and then you know, to get demands met for, you know, your workplace conditions or wages or whatever, you're obviously not going to stay out of school for, you know, whatever. You just started school again. So what is the goal of a school strike?
So actually, Greta Thunberg has this movement called Fridays for Future, where every single Friday she has a strike where she just plans for students to go with her and strike from school as part of like a protest movement. And I think actually, even though we don't strike every single day, as Joe was saying, this isn't like a pro, I would actually say it is more of a prolonged movement. We had a few strikes last year. We're having another one this year, and I definitely see more in our future. I think even though this isn't like one period of time, maybe a few weeks at a time or something where everyone is striking from school, this is like repeatedly happening. It's happening more and more. And people are going to pay attention to that. They're going to say, oh, this keeps happening. Like, obviously, we need to pay attention to what's happening here. They aren't going to stay quiet about it. Something needs to happen.
Yeah, and what's also really important is that we make this strike accessible, right? Because we can't hold a prolonged movement available to youth, expecting them to miss weeks of school at a time, perhaps, right? So when you have one day of a strike, you not only make this accessible to students, but to workforce individuals who might not be able to make more than one day off of work, right? It's very hard to live, especially off of minimum wage. We want to make this strike accessible as accessible as possible to every community possible.
Well, looks like we've got another caller. Annalisa, go ahead, you're on the air.
Good morning. I would like to ask your panelists, your guests, if they have been in contact at all with Greta Thunberg from Sweden. She is in the United States right now. And she started when she was 15 last year. She was in front of the Swedish parliament protesting, and every Friday she takes off from school. Mm-hmm. Do you know about her?
Yes, she is the one who started all of these strikes and this movement. She,
right.
I think this year she'll be at D.C.'s march.
I think it's New York.
Yes, she's in Washington, D.C., and then she's going to address... So she's giving an address later,
mm-hmm.
and she is traveling the world.
Uh-huh.
She was on Amy Goodman yesterday.
Yeah,
on Democracy Now.
Thank you.
I've heard her before, of course. So anyway, I just wanted to bring her up.
Thank you so much for shouting her out. Greta is one of our biggest inspirations.
And thank you, young folk, for bringing this on.
Okay, well,
very important. Thank you for calling.
Of course. Greta Thunberg is one of the biggest inspirations that we have as climate activists. She is especially inspiring because she's really done so much, and she's basically dedicated her life to this movement.
And we haven't directly met her. We don't have a direct line with Greta, but this has been inspired by her in her work, her activism, and we are youth making demands inspired by Greta.
All right, and the number is 503-231-8187. Got about a half an hour left. I've got two youth activists from Cleveland Junior High talking about the youth climate strike coming up a week from tomorrow, September 20th. Gonna be a global day of action. Obviously, you know, I was joking around that I used to be an activist. I mean, I put myself on the line, you know, back in the day, got arrested. Of course, at that time, you actually didn't risk that much when you got arrested. They only started putting heavier penalties as we became more and more effective, talking about, you know, the forest protection movement, Earth First, which actually kind of created a crisis in the Pacific Northwest in its day, because logging was still sort of like the biggest economic activity in the Northwest. And anyway, we actually went against labor at the time, which is kind of interesting. In fact, labor, you know, on the climate issue is really woefully, woefully out of touch, because, you know, everybody in the capitalist productive economy, in one way or another, all of us are implicated in, you know, almost every moment of our lives in you know, in continuing fossil fuel use and consumption and production. And so obviously the jobs, we used to have a slogan in Earth First, no jobs on a dead planet. I still like that slogan. But I remember the Dakota Access Pipeline issue, labor was pretty much, I think there was a few smaller unions who stood out against it. I don't think any of them who had like a direct stake, you know, no pipe fitters or anything. So that's a big one. I mean, you're talking about withdrawing, essentially trying to withdraw from the productive economy is what I see it. Yet, as I said, we're all so thoroughly implicated. It just seems, you know, it seems like a difficult sell. So I'm wondering what, I don't know if you want to respond to that at all. I had some other questions about, you know, what other young people are thinking about. But
first of all, I just want to say that the ability, like the privilege that goes into being able to be arrested, is inherently one that adheres to a white supremacist society, because cash bail and other discriminatory practices do discriminate against lower income communities and people of color. Getting arrested is something I personally fear, just because of my identity as not only a person of color, but as someone who does know that I probably wouldn't be able to get that record expunged, who does know that that would really affect my future, my chances of getting into college.
On the other hand, the civil rights movement really wouldn't have gotten very far if people didn't get arrested.
Yeah, but let's talk about who got arrested. Like, there's a lot of privilege in being a white person and saying, I can get arrested, I want to get arrested, and that's your prerogative, then, and that's the way that you're able to show up for the movement, then that is your journey.
Yeah, but the people sitting at the lunch counters, they were African-American. They took chances because they had to take chances, because nothing was going to change if they didn't take chances.
Yeah, and we all appreciate everything that they have done. Those activists have made a huge change, but we're also talking about there are different circumstances nowadays. We're talking about ICE raids. We're talking about things such as being undocumented. There is still inherent institutional racism, and if a person doesn't want to get arrested, they don't have to. You don't have to get arrested to make a statement. And that's, again, what this movement is trying to, like, be, at least here in Portland. What youth have talked about is the fact that they want this to be a truly just space, a safe space where everybody can show up for their own future. And being able to say, I can get arrested, is something that comes from privilege. There are people who can't say that I can get arrested and be safe with it. A cell, you know, and that is boiled down to race, that's boiled down to gender, that's boiled down to sexual identity, you know. And if you are coming from a place of these privileges, then I think it's better that we leave the conversation out. That's why we've gone through all of the legal means of getting permitted, of making these a safe space, because it's more of a celebration. It's coming together as a community instead of trying to incite more violence, because we've had enough of that, especially here in Portland.
I don't know. I still want to push back, because, I mean, the times...
And I think that's a really great thing to push back. We are here to, though, instead talk about the climate strike and the youth activism, and what they have wanted has been to make this a peaceful protest. And so, yes, if you want to have a show about talking about getting arrested and the implications of privilege of that, that can be something later on, but today is about them. So if we're going to talk about... I know that youth are making demands on that day, and they're going to be making demands of the city to implicate real change within city policy. And I'll let Lana and Yana talk about that if they want.
Okay, so we have a lot of demands. I think the U.S.-centric demands are about the Green New Deal, a respect of, like, indigenous land and sovereignty. Environmental justice, there's like a lot about the implementation of sustainable agriculture and protection and restoration of biodiversity. Four more local demands for Portland. One of them is like Ted Wheeler, stay home. We want him to declare a climate emergency, but the right way. We want him to include youth and frontline communities in creating and consulting on the climate emergency resolution, instead of just mentioning frontline communities without engaging with them. And we want it to be in a just and equitable way.
What's the climate emergency resolution?
It's a resolution that I think Ted Wheeler started, he wanted to bring to Copenhagen for a summit, for like a mayor summit. And he basically mentioned frontline communities in it. He was like, yes, this is to help them, but no youth were mentioned, no actual frontline communities were consulted or engaged with. It was just simply written in there. So what we want him to do is we want him to stay home. We want him to engage with us and talk to us and ask everyone, like, actually engage in a conversation about it and get their input instead of just saying we're going to, like, help frontline communities and bring it to a bring it to Copenhagen and show it off as this, like, climate emergency resolution.
Oh, we got another caller. Erin, you're on the air.
Hi. I wanted to thank the two students who are on the air poll with you, and I wanted to offer my congratulations and my support, and I loved what you both said about wanting peaceful demonstration and about privilege and the privilege of white people to get arrested with fewer consequences. I just think you're doing a splendid job. I plan to go. I'm 73, but I plan to go on the 20th to City Hall, and two spiritual communities I'm aligned with, the Quakers and a Jewish congregation. We both congregations have been talking it up, and we're thrilled that young people are leading this, and this is as it should be, and they should be supported in whatever way that they are asking us to support them. We should not be trying to drive their action in any direction. This is not a labor strike. This, to my mind, this is a way of enrolling massive public support and massive resistance to the kinds of policies that are coming out of this horrible government. And I will take my answer off the air. Just congratulations, you wonderful young women. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, Erin. I'm so excited that you're going to be there on the 20th, and I'm so excited to see you there. I agree with what you're saying.
That was so sweet. Thank you so much.
We appreciate everyone who's going to come and show their support on the 20th, and we're so excited for all of you to be there with us.
And the number is 503-231-8187. We've only got about 15 minutes left, so let's go straight to Andre. You're on the air. Hello, Andre.
Hello?
Yeah, go ahead. You're on the air.
Thank you. Thank you so much. I'm here that are discussing climate change.
Your signal isn't that strong. I don't know if you can move somewhere to make it a little stronger. You're kind of breaking up a little bit. Or try again.
Okay, I'm on speakerphone in my car.
The speakerphone never works on air. Go ahead.
Well, if it never works, then I'll just call later. I just wanted to say thank you to the young women for really having the courage to discuss the privilege of going to jail. And for you as a host, I would really recommend that you take pause and take that information in instead of adopting a defensive posture around that, because I think it takes a lot of courage to do activism in our day and age with all of the barriers and the resistance that's going on. So a big thumbs up to you ladies for having the courage to step up and be leaders, and really appreciate you, and I look forward to joining you on the 20th in Portland with my 8-year-old son.
We are so excited to have you.
Thank you, Andre.
Well, since I'm being called out, I won't go it on at length, but I consider it a political difference or understanding. I mean, if the planet is indeed in such dire shape that if we don't, like, completely transform our ways of life within the next 5 to 10 years, obviously, you know, things have got to change. And the only way I've seen change happen in history is people have lost their lives and sacrificed. And, you know, am I going to be up for that? But so I just don't see any other way around it. Maybe to build up to that, we're going to need to do, you know, safe, you know, inclusive demonstrations. But at some point, you know, people are going to have to, like, really step up and take serious risks. That's all. I can't see any other way, personally.
We could take the caller, but I didn't want to say, isn't the lack of being able to promise somebody's future enough of a risk, enough of a sacrifice? if there is no...
Yeah, but we need to change that.
And I'm going to echo again what Aaron was saying. It is also really a good idea for everybody to take a step back and sit within themselves and understand their own positionalities and the different ways that they navigate this world and how privilege shows up in all of those different ways. But let's take it back to Robin, who's on the line.
Robin, go ahead.
Thank you very much. I also wanted to say I think we have to build a huge, powerful movement. And one of the ways that we do that is make people, families, young children, feel safe being out there. So if people want to put their lives on the line and they want to do things that put them in line for arrest, fine, but not at demonstrations. Those people that want to have peaceful, large, huge, peaceful demonstrations, when other people make a ruckus at their at demonstrations that are advertised as peaceful, in my opinion, it detracts from the movement. It causes the movement to shrink. So, Paul, you and I know each other. I don't think that you are a provocateur, but we know that provocateurs get involved in encouraging violence. Not you, but we know there are. I think the people in the Antifa are really putting themselves out there, but on the other hand, I think they're making it fearful for people to come. So my opinion is, if people want to do something where they're putting themselves at risk for arrest, that is fine. Nothing wrong with that, but not at peaceful demonstrations. There's room for both. Before there were the people getting arrested in the civil rights demonstrations, people tried the peaceful way first. We have not had huge, massive peaceful demonstrations for the climate, and this one, I mean, it takes time to build those. We'll just have to build them. I know people think things are urgent. I agree, but I think a big demanding movement is what we need, and I just encourage people that come on Friday to remember that and respect the will of those people who are the organizers, and if they don't like that, do their own thing.
Absolutely.
Thank you, Robin.
Yeah, I think that really is, again, why we have this movement to be a large peaceful demonstration. It is accessible. It is available for young children, their families, students, the workforce, anyone to come and be educated and experience a safe space in community with one another.
I agree. I think looking at it like it won't have, looking at this movement and saying that there won't be an impact because we're not putting our lives on the line or sacrificing something is a little bit of like a false dilemma. It's we want everyone to be there. We want families to be there. We want children to be there. We want like senior citizens to be there. We want like anyone who's like not able-bodied. We want them welcome there and like able to be there. And if this is something where this is going to be a safe protest, it's going to be somewhere where everyone is welcome, and it's that's partially why we're having a festival as well. It's like a celebration of everyone who's there and fighting for the movement. I completely agree with you, Robin, and thank you for calling and saying what you did.
Thank you.
Although I doubt Antifa has had any intention of showing up at the demonstration in any case. But anyway,
they do have plans. We have seen some, anti-fascism mm-hmm. involvement with the ideologies and people who practice.
So you think there's going to be a black bloc there?
Not necessarily.
Doubt it.
Black bloc does involve or entail, from what I've learned about the anti-fascism movement, perhaps a more violent extreme or protection of protesters.
It's a form of protection, yeah.
Well, that's what Robin was afraid of. Anyway, we can go around and around, but 503-231-8187 is the number. Sorry, I cut you off. Go ahead.
No.
Sarah's on the line. Go ahead, Sarah.
Hi.
I'd like to articulate and emphasize that the speakers today are incredible. I don't know where you've received your training, but it's amazing, and I hope that whatever toolkit you've developed, you could share with other youth. I am an educator at 3 regional universities and also have children in a public school district in Beaverton. And while I see places like PSU and Pacific University in Chemeketa Woodburn organizing around the climate crisis, I'm not seeing it in K-12 in Beaverton at the school where my kids are. And my kids get it, but they don't have the collective tools to implement. And so I'm wondering if you all could speak to that. I see a lot of ways that we could diverge from the conversation about violence and not having violence, but let's spread the toolkit that we know is working. Thank you.
Yeah, so what happens with major cities is that we do have this kind of privilege, as Portland being a bubble, right? A liberal bubble. So because of this privilege and living as a bubble, we get to utilize these tools and these organizations that have chosen to set up shop here. But we, of course, want to reach out to Beaverton. The education necessary and vital to the movement should be accessible to everyone.
I know Beaverton High School, we definitely have some people there trying to mobilize students. I'm not sure how
there's also Raleigh kids? Hills Elementary. We have a couple of lead organizers at the elementary school.
Yeah,
it's pretty great.
So if we were, you know, trying to engage the principal, trying to engage the PTC and parents who are aware of the crisis, would it be, you know, how do we bridge? Is it parent to parent? Is it administrator to administrator? Is it getting youth together and play dates? What do you think is the most effective on the ground tools?
I think all of those work.
Yeah, in my experience, parents really can have such power in their children's education, right? Because when youth say something, it can be easy to just, oh, like, they're going to leave in a couple of years. This is just a new cycle of students coming through. But it's really the parents who have this power of, like, this is my child in school. You are the educator I pay taxes to. What can you do in order to better their future? What can I demand for you?
I think, parents definitely have a power that they don't necessarily always recognize when it comes to schools and administrators. I think as an administrator yourself, I think as you were saying, definitely talking to your fellow administrators, to your coworkers, and just like asking them how they feel about it and what you guys can do about it. That's extremely helpful.
Probably standing up for their kids too.
Mm-hmm. We can offer you this. Do what you can, and it will make a difference. I am so glad you are trying to fight for your children's future.
That's a great message. Thank you all. Good luck. I hope things go really well on the 20th and every Friday after.
Have a great day.
Thank you.
Thank you. Looks like we got one more caller. Andrew, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Hey, good morning. Thanks for taking my call. And thanks for having your guests on that are speaking so eloquently and articulately this morning and sharing this information with the community. My question is your organization affiliated with a 501c3?
I could be the one to answer that. There are some organizations that are affiliated with the 501c3, such as 350 PDX is a nonprofit 501c3. And then we also have numerous other folks showing up there. We really are a coalition, and so there are, you know, grassroots orgs that are involved that don't have that 501c3 backing, such as, Gabriella PDX, Filipino Solidarity organization, but we do have nonprofits involved as well, you know, such as 350 PDX, and then we have youth organizers from their own backgrounds, and yeah, there is just quite a few different things.
Are there any volunteer opportunities this event coming up on Friday?
Yes, if you would like to get involved, like everyone who wants to get involved is welcome. Like today we have, we have volunteer trainings today at the Central Lutheran Church Conference Room. That's up in like Northeast.
Yeah, it's in Northeast. It's tonight from 6 p.m. to 9 p.m. There will be numerous trainings for peacekeepers and volunteers. And if you do want to sign up to volunteer, we have our Facebook page, which is the Portland
Youth Climate Strike, I believe is what it's titled, Portland Youth Climate Strike 2019. There is our Facebook page. We have a few thousand RSVPs on there. You'll know it because of the number, header. I guess, okay. The header and the number. Yeah, and there on that Facebook page, there is a link to our volunteer sign-up form. There's a link to things that we need from the community, such as, like, we currently need a lot of, like, water right now. We're having, like, a difficult time procuring, like, big, like, water barrels for folks because we don't want to be using all these, like, plastic bottles, obviously. And so if y'all know something, that Facebook page has all of the links, same with the website, climatestrikeoregon.org. And there are lots of ways to get involved, whether it be volunteering, whether it be donating to the GoFundMe page, which where we've been getting quite a bit of traction on recently. It is Portland Youth Climate Strike 2019. That is the GoFundMe title. So that Facebook page, the website, Climate Strike Oregon, those all have lots of different opportunities for you to get involved. And on the day of the strike, if you want to volunteer at the festival or the strike itself as like a peacekeeper, you could find all of the links on those websites.
Yeah, and just a quick shout out for our Instagram, Portland Climate Strike. You can also find the GoFundMe link there.
But also, if you want to go to something and get involved, the volunteer trainings are Thursday, which is today, at 6 to 9 Central Lutheran Church. And there's also one on Saturday, if you can't make today, at 5 to 8 p.m., once again, at the Central Lutheran Church. It's going to be in the conference room. So show up. Get involved.
Yeah, that sounds great. Thank you so much, and keep fighting the good fight.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you.
All right, we only got a couple minutes left. Let's just mention again where and when the climate strike's going to take place.
All right. Our strike will be happening September 20th at... And youth are meeting at City Hall at 10:30 a.m. We will listen to speakers. We will have...
Not just youth, everyone.
Yeah, we have everyone there, but yeah, everyone's there. And from there, we will have speakers. We will have people advocating. And then we will march over to the East Bank Esplanade with our demonstration. And we will have a festivity of climate fair and organizations where people and organizations and communities will be tabling and offering resources for ways to, for youth and anyone, honestly, anyone to advocate.
Yeah, there'll be things like food carts, lots of food and beverages. There'll be opportunities to have trainings at the festival as well, educational opportunities, and all of that also building up to that week of action that's following the 20th. So there's so many different ways to get involved and get plugged in. And again, you can find that on climatestrikeoregon.org.
And I see it's got your platform, which is various demands for the Green New Deal and a halt to any and all fossil fuel infrastructure projects, et cetera, et cetera. So again, well, thank you all for coming in. I really appreciate it. Any final thoughts for our audience?
Thank you all for calling in today. Thank you for your support. We're so excited to see you all there on the 20th. And if you can't be there, then we're excited to see you on the week of action.
Yeah, and I just wanna say that regardless if you're youth or not, anyone can make a difference, regardless of age. And we need the power. We are so proud of the people for showing up for this. And I just want to say, like, thank you to everyone coming.
I'm looking forward to it. All right. Thanks again. I really appreciate it. And thank you, John Shuck, for engineering. It's Paul Rowland with Standing In for Voices from the Edge.
Get up, stand up. Stand up for your right. Get up, stand up. Stand up for your right. Get up, stand up. Stand up for your right. Get up, stand up. Don't give up the fight.
Preacher man, don't tell me heaven is under the earth.
Good morning. It's Thursday, September 12th. It's 8:58. This is KBOO Portland. Coming up next, it's Press Watch at 9 o'clock with Teresa Mitchell, her weekly look at the news you're not supposed to know. At 10 o'clock, it's the Heather McCoy Show. And then at 11, it's Between the Covers. Host Ken Jones talks with Lawrence Schoenberg, author of the new book, Four Men Shaking, Searching for Sanity, with Samuel Beckett, Norman Mailer, and my favorite Zen teacher. At 11:30, it's Words and Pictures. S.W. Konzer speaks with local cinema archivists who present screenings of rare and risque films. All of these KBOO programs are made possible by member support. If you'd like to become a member, go to kboo.fm and click on Donate. Teresa Mitchell is next with Press Watch.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of That's No Lady, That's Darcel, produced by Triangle Productions. The play runs from September 19th through October 5th at Portland State University's Lincoln Performance Hall in Portland. Walter Cole owned the first Portland coffee bar, then bought an old beer and wine tavern. He began a drag act that, in 1974, became Darcel 15. This musical tells the life story of Walter, Darcel, and more. Again, that's Triangle Productions, That's No Lady, That's Darcel. From September 19th through October 5th at Portland State University's Lincoln Performance Hall, located at 1620 Southwest Park Avenue in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
This is Press Watch, a weekly counter-propaganda and left opinion program here on your people-supported free radio station, KBOO Portland. I'm Teresa Mitchell. Join me for a brief peek behind the video veil of Monopoly media manipulation and an examination of the news you're not supposed to know. We have some breaking news this morning, and we'd like to invite your calls on the same topic, because Greenpeace has decided to address the Democratic debates by dangling from the Fred Hartman Bridge in Baytown, part of the Houston greater metropolitan area, and over the Houston Ship Channel. Here's some information. Again, it's breaking news story. So I'll be turning to Twitter for some of this information. But just hours ahead of the Democratic Party primary debate, this is Common Dreams article on it, taking place in Houston this evening, 22 activist climbers from Greenpeace blockaded the Fred Hartman Bridge in Baytown, Texas, just after dawn this morning.